country is just one step away from famine. By besieging Yemen, bin Salman wanted to check the strength of the Ansarullah and Houthi forces and also trigger a popular uprising against the Ansarullah by cutting food supplies. Since the Saudi pilots weren't skillful enough, Saudi bombs would constantly target children, women, schools, and wedding ceremonies. Human Rights Watch reported that 309 civilians were killed in airstrikes until August 30th, 2015, less than 6 months since the war. What did Mohammed bin Salman want with this poor nation that's on the verge of famine? How would he benefit from the lethal and bloody airstrikes? Some believe that he had his big dream, the dream of turning Saudi Arabia into the biggest power in the region and turning himself into the most powerful man in West Asia. But his dream faced a big hurdle. Iran, a country that's naturally been the heavyweight in the region for centuries. The Saudis accused Iran of intervention in Yemen and seek to introduce Ansarullah as evidence of Iran's influence in the region. It seems history is repeating itself. The story of Iran in Yemen has started once again. Mohammed bin Salman received intelligence reports that Yemenis are making missiles, but the young crown prince was so confident about the super modern weapons purchase from the United States that he isn't worried about threats by the impoverished Yemen, especially now that he's managed to win support from various countries. For example, he sought approval from neighbors of Iran, Turkey, and Afghanistan for the Saudi invasion of Yemen. Among the Western countries, France, the UK, the US, and Canada all supported Saudi aggression. Among Islamic countries, Bangladesh, the Palestinian Authority, and even the Gaza Strip lent support for the Saudi raid. The support was the outcome of Mohammed bin Salman's diplomatic, political, and economic influence. However, Iran, along with Russia, Iraq, Syria, and the European Union, formed the opposition front. Oman didn't join the Saudi-led coalition and adopted a neutral stance. Indonesia, with the largest Muslim population, and China, with the largest population on the planet, didn't support the Saudi invasion either. Iran had adopted and active diplomacy to defend the national will of Yemenis. The other side of the war was the public opinion. Mohammed bin Salman wanted to depict a young and future-minded image of himself, a man who's come to reform his country. But his record in Yemen didn't help him portray the image. Even worse, two other developments made the dark side of his character more prominent. In the fall in 2017, another soft coup landed bin Salman in a secure place in the pyramid of power in Saudi Arabia. The incident is called the 2017 Purge. About 200 Saudi princes and businessmen were arrested and detained in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Riyadh. According According to news from Riyadh, Prince Walid bin Talal, a major Citibank and Twitter stockholder who's a known figure in English-speaking countries, was among the detainees. At that time, the New York Times carried a report on November 8th that the detention campaign was the latest move by the Crown Prince to grab power. Next year, some other news tarnished bin Salman's image all across the world.
If Saudi Arabia waited for Mr. Obama to approve an intervention in Yemen, Yemen would have been gone and lost long time ago.
A Saudi journalist named Jamal Khashoggi, after entering the Saudi consulate in Turkey's Istanbul, never came out and disappeared forever. The speculations and comments by Turkish officials said that he was killed. Khashoggi was one of the critics of bin Salman, but no one thought that the young crown prince would murder a journalist in such a gruesome manner without leaving a trace. The consequences of the incident were so harsh that even the U.S. Senate was forced to show a reaction. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee suspended selling arms to Saudi Arabia. The administration of Donald Trump had just taken the helm and had promised to boost job creation, didn't take the suspension seriously. In famous images, Donald Trump talks about selling arms to Saudi Arabia, and Mohammed bin Salman, who's sitting right next to him, seems to be very happy to be in this new situation.
But if you look in terms of dollars, $3 billion, $533 million, $525 million, that's peanuts for you. Should have increased it.
For bin Salman, Trump's coming to power meant purchasing more weapons. It meant public opinion had less effect on Trump. Without mincing his words, Trump said that he would continue selling arms to Saudi Arabia even after the Khashoggi murder. At the same time, the pressure on Tehran increased. The West accused Iran of sending weapons to Yemen, but Iran also had something to say. April 23, 2018, bombing a wedding ceremony in Yemen by Saudi fighter jets. The casualties were put at about 50. The bride was also one of the fatalities. It wasn't only Iran that felt the danger by Saudi Arabia. Qatar also cut off political ties with the Saudis for a while. Saudi Arabia had accused Doha of supporting terrorism. Even before that, in 1992, Saudi forces launched an attack on Qatar's border and killed two border guards and arrested another. As for Bahrain, Saudi Arabia had deployed its forces to the country to suppress an uprising in that country. The Bahraini people protested Saudi policies. The UAE, that's after business in the region, pursued goals that are different from Saudi Arabia's. Those policies caused rifts among the Houthi opposition forces. Now, they had to pay all of the costs for the Saudi war. This was what Iran had pointed out time and again. During this period, Abdulmalik al-Houthi was keeping a close eye on the developments. The media noticed that he looked very differently. This is not the Abdulmalik during the first days. He's become thinner and emaciated, just like other people in Yemen who are struggling with food shortages. His thin face shows a leader who shares his people's pain and suffering. Abdulmalik had 8 brothers, and he's younger than all of them. In terms of his personality, he's the polar opposite to Mohammed bin Salman. He's from a poor country and wants to defend his people against other Arab countries. These days, he's thinking of military strategies to deal a strike to Saudi Arabia, some strategies to cause concern for his enemy in Riyadh. The winter in 2015, when Ansarullah took control of the capital Sana'a, the Houthis recognized the Yemeni army's missiles arsenal and took possession of all of them. Different missiles were found in the arsenal, ground-to-ground short-range missiles that have a range of 120 kilometers and ground-to-ground medium-range missiles that have a range of 320 kilometers, in addition to 800 Russian Scud-B missiles. But in addition to all of them, Yemen has some missiles that can hit targets as far as 1,000 kilometers away and can easily target the Saudi capital, Riyadh. The West says Iran gave them the missiles, but what's the story? After the fall of Saddam Hussein, the Ba'ath Party was dismantled. However, Ba'ath military personnel went to different Arab countries. Then, Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh hired 200 Iraqi military experts. They formed the body of Yemen's missile system with Iraq's experience and Russian missile systems in Iraq. Chinese were also involved. On Tuesday, October 4th, 2016, when the U.S. announced that it was going to send 3 warships to the southern shores of Yemen, in fact, it was in response to Ansarullah's attack on an Emirati warship. The attack was carried out with a Chinese anti-tanker C-802 missile. The attack meant that the Ansarullah was now in control of Yemen's territorial waters as well. But the Ansarullah didn't just have missiles in its stockpile. Military drones are another part of the Ansarullah's equipment to fight Saudi Arabia. To track down the threat, Saudi Arabia uses ground-to-air Patriot missiles made by the U.S. that's scheduled to block any ground-to-ground missiles or drones. They're supposed to down the drones or to destroy them mid-air. Yet, the Patriot system has failed to counter Yemeni missiles on numerous occasions. Sometimes it's managed to track the Yemeni missiles, and other times failed to track them. On Saturday, September 14, 2019, Ansarullah prepared to target Aramco oil facility in a major drone strike. Bukayk, in east of Saudi Arabia, is one of the centers of the Aramco state oil company. The Bukaik facilities prepare crude oil for shipment on super tankers. In order to transfer oil to other parts of the world in tankers, sulfide hydrogen has to be removed from it. Bukaik has the biggest facilities in the world for that purpose. Geographically, Bukaik is located in the east of Saudi Arabia, near Bahrain and Qatar and the Persian Gulf. Ansarullah drones have to cross a famous desert to reach Saudi Arabia. It's a vast desert that comprises a large part of Saudi Arabia. No village exists there, and no human beings live there either. It means this is the best and most secure option for an attack. Drones are the most inexpensive type of airstrikes, and all countries are in possession of them. Ansarullah has many drones for its operations, probably over 20 of them. The drones were equipped with missiles and flew in two groups. The first group reached above the facilities at 4 o'clock. The anti-missile systems were activated and started shooting, but they failed to down the drones. In the first wave, the storage facilities were set afire. After the first wave, firefighters were deployed to the site to douse the blaze. All of a sudden, the second wave of drone attacks started. The second group of Yemeni drones was above the stores. In the early hours, Bin Salman got the news and became agitated. This is a nightmare that Abdulmalik Houthi staged for Bin Salman. Soon, he received news that Bukaik was hit in the second wave of drone attacks. His big dreams are burning down in these flames. We don't know what the two rivals, Mohammed bin Salman and Abdulmalik Houthi, had in mind. But after sunrise, the massive aftermath of the attack came to light. 5% of the oil production in the world was lost, about half of Saudi Arabia's oil. And it happened exactly when the oil was supposed to be loaded into the tankers. The Houthis knew very well where they had targeted. The bigger target wasn't oil, but a feeling of insecurity for the Saudi officials and the image and position Saudi Arabia considered for itself as leader of the military coalition in the Yemen war. But it seemed that bin Salman was more cautious than angry. No crushing response to the Houthis. What would happen if the Houthis answered the Saudi reaction with a bigger attack? The Patriot missile system has failed to help Saudi Arabia so far, but if the Houthis are accused of the attack, that means that Saudi Arabia has conceded defeat.
It was an affront to international law, and those responsible should be held accountable for their actions.
After 5 years of war, now Abdulmalik al-Houthi has the upper hand. It was unacceptable for Mohammed bin Salman. So, unofficial sources, news agencies, and some Western countries are pointing the finger at Tehran.
If the Iranian regime and the IRGC, they are trying to hide any evidence from the component and with the technology, they are mistaken.
Whenever the Houthis gain a military achievement, Iran is accused. But isn't Yemen strategic for Iran? Is a horizon on the Red Sea and Indian Ocean and Bab al-Mandab Strait strategically insignificant for Iran. Maybe centuries ago during the Sassanid era, Yemen had strategic importance for Iran, but today the equation has changed. Unlike the past, Iran does not need to be present in a sensitive strait like Bab al-Mandab. The Iranian people know full well what the best strategic weapon is: friendship with the people in other countries. If we view Iran's strategy in that light, the support for the Yemeni people who started the revolution and were attacked by the Saudis will be Iran's best strategic asset. An asset that threatens the greedy regional countries like Saudi Arabia, and it means the story isn't over yet.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hojjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned.
به نام زهرای مرضیه کانون این خانواده تشکیل شده سوره حل عطاست.
The family of Hazrat Fatima to Zahra is admired by Allah in Surah Al-Insan, Ayah 8. One of the main reasons is their charitable works. Imam Ali alayhi salam and Hazrat Fatima used to distribute food freely among the poor people. They also helped the needy and orphans. We, as ordinary people, have to learn from the lifestyle of Hazrat Fatima and Imam Ali alayhi salam. Giving charity and spending money in Allah's path is very much recommended in Islam.
Ikhlas.
One of the other features of Imam Ali and Hazrat Fatima was their sincerity. They spent for the cause of Allah and no one else. They didn't expect others' admirations or thanksgiving. They also wanted Allah's pleasure in all their deeds. In better words, If we as a Muslim family trust in Allah and do all our deeds only for His sake, we can be called a Fatimi family too. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Climate experts warn temporary increases in water levels in the U.S. Southwest will not mitigate the water crisis and drought that have been years in the making. We're prepared for you an article written by Gabriel Cannon. The piece is titled, Flash Floods Wreak Havoc in U.S. Southwest, but are no salve for drought. Flash floods hitting the American Southwest in recent days have shuttered parts of national parks, including in Moab and Zion, closed highways in Colorado, submerged cars in Texas, and trapped tourists in a New Mexico cave. A young woman remains missing after being swept away while hiking in Zion on Friday, 19th of August. But experts say the destructive deluges have not been enough to relieve the drought and the continued pressure on water resources. Even strong storms are unable to overcome dry conditions that are decades in the making. Summer monsoons are a natural feature of the southwest of the United States, and the parched landscapes can typically rely on this annual reprieve. But the intensity between the wet and dry extremes is increasing, along with the destruction that both can cause. As the world warms, scientists predict the effects will worsen. Dr. Andrew Hull, a meteorologist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, Physical Sciences Laboratory, said, "There is a duality in the effect of climate change and the hydrologic cycle, noting that the heavy rains and underlying drought conditions exist on separate timescales. It will take a sustained rainy season over the cold winter months to crack the conditions, and forecasts aren't causing much optimism for the months ahead. Dried soils are also less able to absorb the added moisture when storms are severe." Dr. Andrew Hull said, "We are already in a pretty tough spot where we have low water reserves in our lakes and reservoirs, despite the fact that it looks like we have had a small and temporary reprieve because of some active monsoon rains. The rain has also caused widespread destruction and put people in danger. Authorities had been searching for Jeto Agnihotri, a 29-year-old of Tucson, Arizona, who was reported missing after being swept away by floodwaters in Utah's Zion National Park. The park spokesman, Jonathan Schaefer, said in a news release, her body was discovered on Monday, 22nd of August, about 6 miles south of the area where she was swept away, ending a 4-day search. Jonathan Schaefer said, "Our search and rescue operation is ongoing. We have searchers in the field again, and we are working closely with the National Weather Service to monitor the forecast, and we're going to pay close attention to that going forward." Jeto Agnihotri was among several hikers who were swept off their feet on Friday afternoon, 19th of August, by rushing water in the popular Narrows area in the park, known for its spectacular red rock cliffs and narrow canyons in southern Utah near the Arizona border. Riverside Walk and the Narrows remain closed. Meanwhile, in New Mexico, officials at Carlsbad Caverns National Park said about 150 tourists were evacuated late on Saturday night, 20th of August, after being stranded by rising water. Park officials told people at the visitor center to wait there for hours because of flash floods. In Arizona, emergency crews rescued 4 hikers stranded in Sabino Canyon, east of Tucson, on Friday, and helped 41 students and staff from Marana off school buses that got stuck in high water when the storms began to move. A slow-moving storm dumped record amounts of rain on the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas, prompting rescues from the rising waters. A state of disaster was declared in Dallas County on Monday evening, 22nd of August, after the area got nearly the amount of rain in one day as typically falls over the entire summer. Texas officials have reported a fatality from storms after a pulling an unidentified woman from the waters. The incident is under investigation, but first responders said they believe she died after her car was swept away by flash floods. Severe storms were just the latest to take a toll on the region, which produced a major flash flood from Death Valley earlier this month and pushed the Navajo Nation to declare a state of emergency. Parts of Yellowstone National Park are still in recovery from the multi-million dollar destruction caused by record rains in June, and debris flows forced New Mexico residents hit by early season catastrophic wildfires to evacuate for the second time in mere months. The latest U.S. Drought Monitor summary said, after an extended period of serious drought, the heavy rains have prompted broad-scale improvement in monsoon-affected areas. The benefits included a boost in levels at the beleaguered Lake Mead, which rose 2 feet over the weekend. While those precious inches are promising, the reservoir remains only 27% full and is precariously close to hitting a level at which it can no longer generate hydroelectric power. Even with a strong monsoon in the southwest of the United States, more than half of America's West remains categorized in severe drought by the U.S. Drought Monitor. Calling drought a cascading hazard, Dr. Andrew Howell cautioned that these rains won't spell the end of dry times, especially with forecasts showing little hope for a badly needed wet winter. He said, "Folks within this region might be seeing increases in water levels and perhaps letting their guard down. Just because you have a couple of weeks or couple of months of good precipitation during the summertime That doesn't mean the lake levels are even close to coming to average. He noted, we are still in the midst of a huge drought. Furthermore, scientists say it's been a brutal summer so far in western United States, where wildfires and severe drought have emerged as a growing threat. As spells of excessive heat become more frequent, the strain on power and water utilities will become more acute. Just recently, the federal government ordered water cutbacks across several western states to protect the beleaguered Colorado River. California's grid operator made similar power usage requests during the summers and falls over the last 2 years, when the region experienced several bouts of record-breaking hot weather. Power systems withstood heat waves in 2021, but rolling blackouts for 2 days in August of 2020 left about 400,000 households without electricity. On Wednesday, 17th of August, the California grid operator projected power demand would peak at 44,919 megawatts, the highest since September of 2020, when usage hit 47,236 megawatts. 1 megawatt can power around 1,000 U.S. homes on a typical day, but only about half of that on a hot summer day. As a result, power prices during the day in Southern California and in Washington State could climb to their highest points since September of 2021. The heat is also raising the risk of wildfires. The Wishon Fire, a 350-acre blaze in the Sequoia National Forest, was 35% contained. On Tuesday, 23rd of August, the U.S. government warned that more drastic cuts in water usage were needed to protect dwindling supplies held in reservoirs that are crucial to the well-being of 7 western states. 2 reservoirs, that is Lake Mead and Lake Powell, have fallen to just above one quarter of their capacity this summer. Authorities say if they fall much further, the lakes will be unable to generate hydroelectric power for millions of people in western United States. The U.S. National Weather Service said in Big Bar, an unincorporated area of Northern California, for instance, temperatures could reach 43 degrees Celsius in these days, while further north, residents in Electric City, Washington, could see temperatures of 105 degrees Fahrenheit.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of Islamic Laws. I'm your host, Mahdi, and we're joined by Sheikh Javid. Salaam alaikum, brother.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, brother, for accepting our invitation. Well, dear audience, on this series of this program, we are going to talk about the Islamic rules regarding homes, according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's listen to a short biography of Ayatollah Khamenei.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Well, the first question today is, a person deposited an amount with a Hajj travel agency in order to perform Mustahab Hajj, but he died before he could visit the house of Allah the Exalted. What is the ruling concerning his money? Is it obligatory to spend it for performance of Hajj on his behalf? Is it subject to khums? According to the fatwas of Ayatollah Khamenei, we are ready to listen to your answer, dear Sheikh Javid.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The value of the Hajj travel document obtained in exchange for the money deposited in the account of the Hajj agency is considered a part of his inheritance. And of course, in the inheritance is not used to perform Hajj on behalf of the deceased person. And it cannot be used for any other purposes as well. It is necessary that the inheritance is divided among the heirs. Now, there are, for example, he has got some children here. He has got, sons and daughters. And that part of the money which is deposited in the Hajj agency's account must be withdrawn. Uh-huh. And it should be divided among the heirs, among the people who inherit the deceased man, of course. In the event that they allow or they all agree to use the money to perform Hajj on behalf of the deceased father, uh-huh. of course they can do so, and it's good. It's very important and very much recommended for the children to perform Hajj on behalf of their parents And of course, they one of them should volunteer to perform the Hajj. And khums is not payable on the inheritance. You know, if uh-huh. if it is inherited, khums is not payable. Generally speaking, khums is not payable on inheritance, uh-huh. no matter how much the quantity of the. If it is in billions, again, it's not payable. Khums is not payable on inheritance, no matter how much you receive from your father, from your deceased father. You are not supposed to pay khums from that amount of money.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And actually, doing a Hajj on behalf of him is due to actually the agreement of all of his children.
There's also one thing that maybe it's some father before the signs of death approaching him, he leaves a will uh-huh. stating or directing his children to perform Hajj in the event that he dies. Okay, uh-huh. in the middle of going to Hajj. So in that case, if one of the children accept to perform Hajj, because it's very much important that the children accept to perform Hajj, okay? If otherwise they do not accept or that they are not in a position to perform Hajj, it's not necessary for them to perform Hajj. In the event that they accept and they say, okay, yes, Father, we are going to perform Hajj on your behalf, and he dies resting assured that one of his children is going to perform Hajj on his behalf, of course that person who undertakes to perform Hajj on his behalf, he should do it using the money left by his father, the money that is deposited obviously with the Hajj agency. And if there's no money deposited there, they can use 1/3 of his property, uh-huh. 1/3 of his asset to spend on the expenses.
To perform Hajj.
Yeah, to perform Hajj, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, dear Sheikh Javed. Dear audience, stay tuned with IRIB English Radio. We'll be right back.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Akbar.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Welcome back to your audience of IRIB English Radio. You're still listening to the program Islamic Laws. And dear brother Sheikh Javed is going to answer our questions regarding khums based on the fatwas of Ayatollah Khamenei. One of the audience has sent us this question. An insurance company owes me some amount of money instead of medical expenses, and I will receive it one of these days. Is it subject to khums?
According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the amount paid for treatment and the like from one's income and then, for example, returned by the insurance company one day, sooner or later, are not ruled as new income because it's the same amount that you spent a few days earlier. And now the same amount of money is returned to you. You are getting back what you had spent. So the insurance company is supposed to return the very money of the person who spent his money on treating his illnesses. And if it is not spent on living expenses until the end of the khums year, of course, it will be liable to khums. And therefore, he should pay khums from the money which is not spent and over which 1 year has passed. And of course, if it is returned after the end of the khums year, then Ayatollah Khamenei says that its khums must be paid immediately because a year has already passed over it, and therefore khums should be paid. So the main point here is to mention when it comes to the money you receive from the insurance company after 1 month or two, because that's what we understand from the insurance company, people who insure themselves. They visit a doctor and then the doctor prescribes medicines and then the individual gets their medicine or the money from the insurance company. The insurance company gives them the same money that you spent few days back. So actually the insurance company is returning you the money, returning you the money that you spent. So in the event that 1 year runs over the money, it becomes liable to Khums, and you should pay Khums from it.
Okay, thank you, dear Sheikh Javed. And the last question in this program, is Khums applicable to the money that I have saved from my mother's salary to purchase things for my wedding in the future?
That's also a good question. I know if you have saved the very money you received as your monthly salary, you must pay its Khums at the end of the Khums year, unless you want to buy necessary items for your wedding within several days. For example, if in the near future, let's say in 1 week or 2 weeks, you are going to use the money to spend the money or to use the money to buy things you you need for your wedding, of course, Khums is not paid on the money, even if the Khums date passes. Mm-hmm. Because you need those items, you badly need those items on your wedding day. And this is, of course, not the opinion of the other religious authorities. Ayatollah Sistani, for example, says that Khums should be paid from the money which you have saved up.
In order to a special purpose.
Yeah, actually. To purchase certain things you need on your wedding day or for your wedding. No matter how much badly you need the money, you should pay Khums from it. But Ayatollah Khamenei has a more softer approach. He is lenient and he is flexible when it comes to the wedding expenses. He says that wedding expenses are very costly and some families do not afford it, and therefore if they save money for the wedding expenses and a year runs over the savings, still they are not supposed to pay Khums. Provided that the money is used to buy something within a few days, you know, within several days of the week or the month, you know. Mm-hmm. And it should not be kept there in the savings account for another year. Otherwise, that quite suggests that he or she did not need it in the first place.
Uh-huh. And the purpose is important for wedding.
Yeah, for wedding, of course.
It is permissible, actually.
It is permissible to keep it.
Not for any other purpose,
purposes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, dear Sheikh Javed, for your nice answers, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio, for staying with us. In case you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And you can follow us on social media. Just type Call of Islam Radio. Until our next episode, fi aman Allah and goodbye.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.